Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Sunday, a day to worship. Worship a small egg-shaped ball.
Oh no, he drops the ball.
You've got to respect the ball.
Long live the weekend. Long live rugby league.
Oh, you've got to love your rugby league.
Welcome to the Triple M Sunday Sin Bin.
And welcome back. It's Magic Round and a great weekend it is too. About 24 degrees in Brisbane. The sun is shining. Parramatta lead the Warriors 24-0 in the first game of Sunday at Magic Round with about 15 and a half minutes gone in that game. And, of course, we're going to call the next game for you. There's a couple of good games coming up. By the way, just before I go to that, next week we will have that Parramatta Manly game. So it's a wonderful opportunity. They're both firing. They play each other. We'll have that game for you live on the Triple M network. Before we go any further,
we've got to get that song.
Yeah,
next week
we'll get that. We'll get that off YouTube. Paul,
yeah, it's actually 12-0, isn't it?
What did I say?
24.
No, I said. Did I say? I thought I said 24. No, I beg your pardon. You're right, Paul.
Although Parramatta now just scored, make it
16-0. Yes. I'm sorry if I said 24. 16-0. You know what? I felt like I said something wrong. I felt like something wasn't right there. But you know, I'm so used to that feeling.
That,
I
guess. That was the last segment.
Mate, it was just mate. Right? You know.
Mate, the Maroon Confidential.
I'm here with you now, mate.
The Maroon Confidential, it's got to go back to something like the Maroon 5.
Mate, the Maroon Confidential was great.
Mate, the Maroon 5 was better.
You just got upset because people were laughing at you trying to dance. I've told you before, you dance like Elaine off Seinfeld.
Oh, yes.
You know? One thumb going one way. I am here with you today, mate. I'm not in Sydney 1,000 k's away. Mm. If you've got something to say, say it, okay? Gordon Tallis, Paul Kent, Reedy, Parramatta leading the Warriors 16-0 on the phone from the mighty South Sydney Rabbitohs who have already won a game at Magic Round. Let's get Jai Arrow on. Jai, welcome to the Sunday Sin Bin.
No, thanks for having me, boys. Appreciate it.
Of course. Hey, mate, what was the talk before we get into Magic Round? What was said through the week about that Melbourne game?
Yeah, not much. We didn't really say much about it, obviously. We did some video and obviously tried to, you know, sort of identify where we could have been better defensively. Obviously, leaking 50 points, you're not going to win footy games, so we need to be on defensively. And I thought for the majority of the game last night, we were pretty good. And we obviously let in that late two tries there, which we weren't probably too happy with, but it was obviously a much better performance for us than it was last week against Melbourne, but not much was too said. It was just sort of move forward and get on with the season.
Jai, the big issue this weekend has been the crackdown on head-high tackles. We've seen a lot of players go to the sin bin, one player sent off. I just want to ask, as a player, particularly a middle forward, do you support the NRL stance here to try and eliminate this out of the game, or do you think they've gone too far?
Oh, yeah, look, that's a hard one. I suppose, you know, I'm all for duty of care for the players, and I'm sure there's no one intentionally going out there to tackle someone in the head or try and hit him in the head. It's just, you know, I suppose it comes down to the game's getting so fast now where you're under so much fatigue that you just sort of throw those lazy arms out and, can make contact with the head. But, I'm all for them trying to look after the players and our safety, but then again, I think it's just got to be in moderation. Obviously, we saw the first, I think there was four people simmed in, and then a lot yesterday, so it's definitely different, but we're just going to have to put up with it, because they're the rules, and the NRL make the rules, we don't.
Jai, there's a lot of talk, Jai, that's as simple as players changing their hitting zone, where they target. That's a simplistic view, right? How hard is that to actually do?
Yeah, it is hard, I suppose, and everyone's different heights as well, and that doesn't help. And some people, when they're carrying the ball, can either slip over or duck. So, yeah, it's definitely a tough one. But, yeah, as I said, look, we're just going to have to find ways to eliminate it. But as for now, we'll just continue to play the game as best we can without, you know, giving away, I suppose, stupid penalties that are all getting placed in him.
Hey, Jai, are you aware of, I don't think a side has lost the game by 50 points and gone on to win the grand final? Did Wayne didn't say anything about that?
No, he hasn't spoken anything about that, and I'm sure he's not too worried with the, you know, with the side we've got and attacking power. Obviously, you don't want to make excuses and that, and we had a lot of changes, but yeah, we're confident with the side we've got, and hopefully we can start sort of working better defensively. We've probably leaked too many points over the past month, so that's going to be a big focus leading into next week, which is, you know, we're up against the heavyweights in Penrith, and they're being tremendous defensively and with the ball as well. So, you know, I think defence is a big key, but we're not too worried about that sort of stat. And I suppose, you know, there's always records that need to be broken.
Hey, Joe, can I just take you back to the crackdown this weekend? What's the talk been like amongst the players about it?
Yeah, it hasn't been too much. Obviously, the only sort of thing that we heard about it was Wayne just sort of reiterated that they were cracking down on it. So just, you know, make sure we're trying to tackle in the right place and we're not slipping up and catching someone's head. So that was the only real sort of conversation we had with the team and the coach was sort of Wayne before the game to tell us. They're obviously cracking down on it, so just make sure we're doing the right things and we're not getting simmed in, even though James Sewell got simmed in, but I won't hold that against him.
Hey, Jai, but on a positive, mate, you crossed the line and you celebrated by drinking the football. What did it taste like?
Yeah, it was very tasty. It's been a while, and it was just a sort of a sigh of relief. Thank God I got over that white line. It's been a while, and it always feels good to get over, and especially in front of that crowd last night. They were tremendous and loud as well, and it was right in front of the South members. So, it was enjoyable, and I definitely loved it.
Hey, Jai, you've been through it yourself when you left the Titans to come to Souths. What's the camp like this been this week with the news that Adam Reynolds isn't going to be at the club beyond this year?
Yeah, look, it's obviously, it's sad to see Reno go from his, I suppose, his junior club. He's been there his whole career, and he's South through and through. But I suppose he made the decision for himself and what was best for him. And I suppose with the game these days, you've got to do what's best for yourself. And I'm sure that's what he's done. Obviously, it's sad to see him go, the footy department. But you know, off field, he's an absolute pest. So definitely not going to miss him putting his fingers in places that they shouldn't go. And buddy, he's an absolute punishment. Right? But definitely a great bloke. But sad to see him go.
Just on that though, Jai, the fact is he is so integral to the way you guys play your footy. And while everybody, I get you as a teammate, you understand him doing the best for himself and he's looking for a 3-year deal and he's got that at the Broncos, which Souths weren't prepared to offer. But the fact is you go into next season without him as your halfback. And dare I say, I think it might be some sort of step back for the Rabbitohs that you're not going to have him as your playmaker anymore and you've got to bring a young kid coming through and take the time to develop him. So he's leaving the club has an impact on everybody else at that club. I was just wondering, from a football point of view, is there a concern there?
Yeah, look, that's definitely a tough one. And I suppose your halfbacks, your general, they lead, they steer you around. And I think Renault's got the best kicking game in the comp. So I suppose it is, it's not good for us, but we're just going to have to find a way. And I'm sure the club will be doing everything in their power to, you know, either bring in a young kid or whether they go and get someone else, but I'm not too sure. But that's sort of something we'll have to worry about next year. But as of now, we've got Reno as our skipper and as our halfback, and he's definitely handy to have. But it's definitely a tough one. But I'm sure that in the future we'll be right.
Joy, forget about next year. What about next week? I think you got Penrith. Is that right?
Yeah, Penrith and Dubbo.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's exciting. I suppose. If you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best. And at the moment, they're the best side in the comp. So it's enjoyable. And obviously, we get to give back to Country Rugby League. And it's always good going out to rural places like that where they get behind you and either cheer you or boo you. So you're definitely looking forward to the challenge of getting out there and playing a quality side in Penrith.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I know we love taking games rural, fantastic, but this is a Rabbitohs home game, so arguably two of the better teams in the comp, and they meet in Dubbo next weekend. A massive weekend for Dubbo, And I believe that they have some tickets to give away if you're listening through Triple M Dubbo. G'day to you and thanks for listening today. And Jai, I think we'll let you go there, mate. Congratulations on last night. The Rabbitohs are back on track and looking good things for the top four.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Let's talk about that game yesterday. The Raiders getting a win over the Doggies. In the end, though, with 12 men, but for a little while they only had 11. But they got a win. The Raiders got a win 20-18 over the Doggies. We've got three players who are in trouble with the judiciary. Obviously, the big fella, Papali'i. Hodson's another one, and I think White. So what's the latest on those, Reedy?
So Papali'i is looking at 3 to 5 weeks for that high shot on Tui Katoa, I think it was. White's looking 1 to 2 weeks for the cannonball on Adam Elliott from memory. And Hodgson's looking at 1 to 2 for the chicken wing on Luke Thompson. So they could be short next week, Canberra.
Yeah, well, I think they've got a big game too. I might even have Melbourne. So
they have got Melbourne. Yeah, they've got Melbourne, the Roosters, the next fortnight, I think.
Yeah.
So they need all hands on deck.
Well, they certainly do. And that's a big out, isn't it, Gordy Papali'i?
Yeah, I thought the Raiders yesterday, like they had to win. They were coming up against the Dogs and the Dogs were desperate. And, you know, to sit there in the crowd and watch it, it was actually quite entertaining. It was actually a really entertaining game to watch where, you know, like you look at where the both sides have been in the last month of footy where you thought it might have been a bit of a stinker, but it was great and it went end to end. And in the end, the Raiders, you know, right at the end, they sort of dug deep and on the left, they scored a couple of tries to get them home. But if they lose those three guys and they come up in the next month, they could lose all confidence.
Well, I mean, they won that game with 11 men on the field. When they had two in the sin bin, that's when they won that game. Well, sorry, one sent off, one in the sin bin. Yeah. That's when they won that game. And they showed some character, which is, you know, it was interesting. It was a big day for Canberra because there'd been all that criticism of the club or speculation about blokes being unhappy and the camp was unhappy. And they showed some character, which, you know, if you're an unhappy camp, you don't show that sort of character. So I think that answered some of the critics, probably silenced some of the doubters, but life gets really difficult for them now, the next fortnight.
Poor old Doggies, it seemed like from the minute, this is a comment Sterlo made in commentary, from the minute the Raiders went down at 11 men, 12 men, the Doggies just, that's the minute they lost their way.
Yeah, they did. He obviously made the changes, Trenter, in the week, dropping Kyle Flanagan and playing Wakeham and Avarillo, I think, were the halves. And you know, when they needed to stand up in that game, they went missing, basically. And it's going to be a long year for them. I think we all realise that now. They're learning on the run, and it's going to be a tough year.
I have seen it a couple of times, Paul, over the, you know, probably the last 40, 45 years of going to the NRL. I have seen it, been there on a couple of occasions when the team that is playing a man down does grind out a win. Doesn't happen often, but it happens.
Yeah, it happens. It galvanises teams in some respects, and they sit there and they get a little bit fiery and bring a bit of energy to their defence and say, right, we're not going to let these buggers get over the top of us now. We've lost someone. So in some ways it could be a real starter for teams to get going when they lose a player. It I suppose, brings up their energy levels. And I think the Raiders did that. I don't know what happened to Canterbury. I was a bit disappointed with them. But the Raiders, I didn't think their problems were as bad as what I saw yesterday, until I saw it yesterday. They are in a bit of a hole at the moment. But I think in some ways that did galvanise them. They need to be able to build on that. But this is going to hurt them. Hodgson's gone for 1 to 3, depending on what he tries to do with the charge. Whiten's gone 1 to 3, and Papali'i gone for 3 to 5. So that's two of their spine players plus their main middle forward. So it's going to be a massive... Massive obstacle to overcome.
But, Paul, how do they fix it? You said that you thought that their problems were bigger than what you first thought, and I just thought that their marquee players weren't playing the way that they had in the last couple of years, and they've been up for a long time. How do they get out of it?
Gordy, I wonder whether the game has finally got too fast for Josh Papali'i. We all marvel at his performance last year with the rule changes, but it's gone another level again this season, and he seems to be struggling with it. The fact that the Raiders actually got better when he was off the field, I think it's a concern for Papali'i. And the other thing that I haven't seen in the Raiders, which for 4 or 5 years, they've been the best team in the competition with second phase play. Their ability to just get on the back of each other and just roll forward. It's been Raiders football for a long, long time. And the rule changes when they were introduced last year, we thought would benefit the Raiders. And I think they did have a pretty good year. even though they got beaten in the preliminary final at the end of the season. And once again this year, though, what's happened is a lot of other teams have gone away, obviously looked at the way the Raiders are attacking their footy, and sort of got on the back of that. And there's a lot of second phase. You watch Melbourne play a very structured style, but the minute there's a breakdown in the opposition defence, they go very ad lib and they just play through, and they all support each other and off they go. And that was what the Canberra did well for so long, but they're not doing it that well at all now, and we're seeing hesitation in their attacks. So when they're taking the ball to the line, if there's an offload there, in the past years there'd be one or two players hitting holes around the offload, but now there's nobody there because they're almost trying to set up for the next play. And that's a slow style of football that you can't win in anymore. And the good sides, Penrith are the best at it. Penrith, when they find a chink in the defensive line, they just flood through it. And there's just people coming everywhere, and it gives the ball carrier plenty of options. And they're great at it. And you look at the way Luai's been playing, he's been tremendous at that, better than anybody. Walker, when he's firing, is terrific at it. That's the new style of game at the moment. That's what you got to do. That's what Trent Barrett, that was one of the reasons he dropped Kyle Flanagan, because he plays a very structured style of footy. And the game's not played that way anymore. There's a subtle change, and you need to be able to play instinctive footy, and you need to be able to play on the back of what's happening right now rather than trying to set up all the time. And I don't think Canberra, and I don't know the reason why, but I don't think Canberra have adapted as well as what I thought they would.
I reckon you can't understate, Kenny, how important the loss of Nicol Klokstad was for them. I think on that front, he's the sort of fullback who can take advantage of that sort of stuff. And look, Caleb Aitken's having a go, but he's not Nicol Klokstad. I think he's been outstanding for them over the past...
Is it Klutschter?
Klokstad, is it? Over the past Klokstad. 2 years. Mm. And George Williams has been a bit down this year as well. I thought he was pretty good yesterday, George Williams, but obviously he's a bit unsettled, and there's talk that Wigan launched a massive bid to get him back to England. So... I reckon, and the other point you've made, obviously, I think the game's left a lot of guys behind at the moment. There's a lot of players, older players in particular, who are struggling with the game now because it's just so fast.
Yeah.
I think some clubs are just going to have to completely, if it stays this way, there's going to be a complete reshaping of some squads. Mm.
From the makers of The Earth is Flat and I'm Only Having One Beer comes I Call BS.
Okay, well, you know how this works by now. The boys just call BS on something that's grinding their gears. It can be footy-related. It doesn't have to be. Paul, you're a man with plenty of things grinding your gears. What would you like to call BS on?
Oh, look, I call BS on Canterbury. News has come through in recent days that they've probably lost Brandon Smith for next year. They obviously, the club is chasing him very hard. They have signed Josh Adokar. But I just want to question what's happened at Canterbury. So at the end of last season... they let 8 players go, including Aidan Tolman, who's one of the club mainstays and is a thorough professional, a guy that you would think that young kids coming into the club would learn plenty from. Another guy who was among those 8 was Kieran Foran. Obviously, Kieran had his injury problems over the years, but again, a great professional. And my problem with Canterbury is this. If you go back some years to the end of the Des Hasler reign, and then when Dean Pay came in, all we got from the club was this narrative about how the salary cap's in such dire straits, it's going to take years to fix. And we were all expected that this was going to be the year that they were going to finally be back to square one and be able to go into an open market. But they've let like the likes of James Graham go. They let Brett Morris go. Moses Mbai, Josh Reynolds, Sam Cassiano, Aaron Woods was there long enough for a cup of coffee. Dave Clemens been released. Then you obviously put on top of that Tolman and Foran been released in recent year at the end of last year. They are all very good players. They are players who were all at Canterbury at some point, and we were all told that they had to be released because the club did not have the salary cap. They've now got the salary cap and nothing's happened. The club is not in any place. They've not signed any players for a year back or for some time down the line. So there's no building going on. Trent Barrett is basically starting from scratch in the club's recruitment process. This is not a Trent Barrett problem. This is a Canterbury problem. But this is a problem where you've got a rookie CEO, you've got a rookie head of football, and respectfully, you've got a rookie coach, and a rookie chairman. The club has got to start getting in the fight. They are a club that they need to get going. They need to start showing some smarts and getting out into the market and actually trying to land some contracts. Trent Barrett is carrying the load himself. This has been this is not a 2021 problem. This was a problem in 2020, 2019, and 2018. And the club, all they did was offer excuses about why they couldn't get it done because of their salary cap. Well, the salary cap's opened up now. There's been no planning about what they do with their roster. It's all starting from scratch now. And the problem with that, it puts them another 2 to 3 years back. So yeah. I want Canterbury to get off their backsides and start getting out into the market and actually start landing some contracts. And if the club is all they build themselves up to be, then get out and show everybody that. Because right now, all we're seeing out of Canterbury is some good, good players go off to other clubs, perform at other clubs, and meanwhile, nobody's coming through at the Bulldogs.
And isn't it amazing if you like our vintage and all you can remember, the one constant thing, Reedy, in rugby league was the Bulldogs being there or thereabouts.
Yeah, they're in a massive hole at the moment. We've seen that. The way they played yesterday was just symptomatic of their year. They're just not going. They're treading water at the moment. And they've signed a couple of players, but, geez, they need to sign some more, plenty more.
Yeah. Okay. Since they've come into the comp, they've played in a grand final nally every decade or something like that, haven't they?
It's been amazing, yeah.
They had a great record. I think it ended... they've had it through the... they've played the grand final in every decade since the 70s. Canterbury were a losing club at one point. And in great... You know, in testament to what Bullfrog Ball, the late secretary of the club who ran the club, he went away and thought, I'm sick of losing every year. They weren't a great club. So he went out and he bought a couple of players, including Bobby McCarthy. Maureen, you help me with this. Bobby McCarthy, a couple of South Sydney players.
Gary Stevens.
Yeah. Bobby McCarthy and Gary Stevens. And they came to Canterbury, and admittedly they were at the end of their careers, but what they taught Canterbury was how to win. And they instilled this doctrine within the club about toughness, about winning, and about what's acceptable there as far as standards go. And from that point on, Canterbury have played in the grand final every decade since, won premierships every decade since. But I tell you what, they are already at long odds to win a grand final in the 2020s because there's no plan there. There's no direction that you can look at and say this is what Canterbury stand for and this is where they're heading.
All right. Okay, what about you, Reedy? Would you like to call BS?
Yeah, I'm going to call BS on... I mentioned this yesterday. The gibber, the fool, the clown who racially vilified Tyson Frizzell on social media yesterday. The NRL has now got involved in this. And they've asked Tyson whether he wants to push on with the matter and press ahead with the matter and take action. And Tyson wants to take it further. And I hope he does, because how many times does this have to happen before people start listening and heeding the... It's ridiculous that this is going on. Yep. And this bloke was gibbering about, whinging about, I think, fantasy points or multis or something like that, and used some pretty ordinary language towards Tyson Frizzell. And I hope the NRL and the law catch up with him. And
you can bag someone, just keep colour and everything out, race and everything out.
But over your fantasy league or your tips,
it's fantasy.
It's crap.
Yeah.
That's a good one, Reedy.
Thanks, Reedy.
Hey, mate, you know what? You can come back. I think.
Oh, really?
I actually think Hoops has lost his job.
Who?
Hoops.
Oh yeah, no, he's got.
Mate, because he eats all the twisties. Mate, he eats all the twisties.
Yeah.
Mate, he doesn't go on the road. Reedy's made the sacrifice to come here.
Yeah, and look...
I'll tell you what, I'm going to call BS on. So obviously it's been a really busy week and a lot of people have travelled. An Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah, you book it.
I've never booked one.
Okay, you can book an Uber, right? And it might say they're 10 minutes away or 12 minutes away. One yesterday took the wrong turn. I watched him. And he said, they've changed their drop-off address. And I watched him. And he goes, you cancel. So then he gets the $8. If he cancels, I said, no, you cancel. And it's sort of like, no, you cancel. You know, like when you're first in love, no, you hang up. I said, you cancel. You cancel. Yeah. And he's a South African and he was a good fella because I could just understand his accent. And he didn't. So I jumped in a taxi and I had come back here to the ground.
Yeah.
And I made him hang around my area for 25 minutes. He kept on ringing. I said, mate, I'm just coming down now. So I think I got one back up. But Uber drivers.
Yep.
When you get a better offer, don't cancel.
That's right.
Take that offer then. It's like breaking a contract.
That time's never accurate on when they're going to arrive.
Oh, it's never.
Never accurate.
Mate, and I'm over him eating my chips too.
Well, you can always go back.
You go order food, and they now they've got to staple it together.
Oh, the Uber guy.
And then that's when you've got to check the Uber driver, see whether he's got a stapler there, whether he just opens it up and restaples.
You reckon he might do that?
Oh, yeah.
Pull open the tweezers. Boys, I'll be very quick here because I just wanted to point this out, and it's not often I get serious. That little Aussie battler, Matthew Johns, with a busted back, got in the back of a Winnebago. He was in so much pain, Matthew Johns. When they got to Karua, his wife begged him, let's turn around, let's go back, the beautiful Trish. With tears in his eyes, Matthew Johns would not turn around. He ploughed on from Sydney to Brisbane in the back of a Winnebago, and when he got here, they had to get medical help to him before he could leave the Winnebago. This is how committed this guy is. This is why he is who he is. That's what he's done.
Do you owe him a favour?
No,
what's going on?
This is
what are
I'm
you
getting
calling
the
BS on
this
us
is
for
what
then?
He. I'm not calling BS on him. If you'd let me finish for once, you're getting like Gordon.
You're getting like Gordon because you got no point.
Hoops couldn't even get in a plane and fly here for 3 hours today. This is like I'm calling
Paul
BS
Kent
on
couldn't
Hoops
fly because his parents couldn't jump on the little infant.
Yeah. So I'm calling BS on Hoops for not being here while Matty Johns went to all that effort. And the doctor said you shouldn't be even leaving the house. And here he is up here. So, Hoops, you're out. Reedy, you're in. Now, special guest right now, the CEO of the NRL, Andrew Abdo. Thanks for taking the time out, old mate.
No problem. Great to be here.
You couldn't ask for this to have gone better this weekend. I know a lot of people have got plenty to say about some of the refereeing decisions, but from a spectator's point of view, from a spectacle, I got to give this 10 out of 10. It's been wonderful.
How good has it been? I mean, you know, you can't control the weather, but we've had magnificent weather. The city of Brisbane has turned it on for us. Where else would you rather be than in Suncorp Stadium watching 8 games of NRL? And you know what I've really enjoyed? Seeing all the fans from all over. We've had 25,000 interstate visitors, you know, in the Parramatta jumpers, in their Warriors jumpers, all around the city. You can see it, you can feel it, you can hear it. You know, it's rugby league festival, and we've just announced that we'll be back again next year, which is incredibly exciting too.
Are you saying, Andrew, that at some point are we going to look at other cities? Because this seems a perfect fit.
Yes, of course we will. I mean, Magic Round is a celebration of rugby league, so why wouldn't we want to think about all rugby league markets? But for now, you know, we're building something really special. And we want to reward the fans that want to travel and come to Suncorp. And also we want to reward our fans throughout Queensland. So we're locked in for next year. We're incredibly excited about that. We got 41,000 on Friday night. We got, you know, 44,000 last night. We want to move to get a sellout across all 3 days next year.
Tell me this. Is there a chance of having two? Because I absolutely love it. Like, as a fan going to the game, on Friday night I was a little bit critical because I thought the oxygen left with the send-offs, and when you realise what the game's doing, it, you know, to clean it up and make sure that the mums and dads and the kids want to play the game. But yesterday, to sit there and watch, as you said, a Cronulla, Dragons, Raiders fan all sitting there hugging, having a beer, watching different teams, like they're watching the Dogs play, for Christ's sakes. But it's just great for rugby league fans. Is there a chance of having two of them?
Why not? Let me say this though, the logistics that have been involved in making this happen, this was years in the planning. We want to make this, you know, big and special and a great destination for our rugby league fans. And, you know, maybe down the track, Gordy, there might be a second Magic Round, but for now, let's just make sure we max out.
Andrew, it's been a wonderful promotion so far, what this whole weekend has been about. The games probably haven't quite lived up to the rest of it. The promotion itself has been terrific. But in hindsight, do you think it was a mistake to introduce this crackdown, which has threatened to overshadow Magic Round?
No, I mean, I'm glad you asked that, Kenty. I think this is a great opportunity to clarify a few things. You know, these aren't new rules, and this certainly wasn't a crackdown that was just ahead of Magic Round. We've been talking to the clubs and the players over a number of weeks now. The commission made it clear at the start of the season that we wanted to eradicate harsh shots, we wanted to eradicate foul play, and, you know, there's been several communications through to the clubs. We sent a memo 2 weeks ago. Graham spoke about it at his footy briefing. And we sent another reminder this week. These aren't new rules, but what we are doing is we're saying if players have harsh shots in a game, there's going to be consequences, and that could result in sin bins and in send-offs. Now, we don't want to see that. No one wants to see teams playing with 12 or 11 players. And I'm hoping there's a steep learning curve here and everyone adjusts, just like has happened in the past with other changes that we've made for the right reasons. And this is for the right reasons.
I get that. Can I just ask this, though? So do you think that the message has failed to be sold? Because from what I can see, most clubs have actually handled it pretty well. It's the media that have reacted badly to the changes and to what they're seeing. Do you think it's probably a bit lost in the selling of it, so to speak?
Well, Paul, if you're saying that, then I think it certainly is the case. But, yeah, I mean, of course, look, like anything, there's a learning curve. You know what? We're in a competitive game, and the coaches and the teams that adapt quicker to rule changes or, in this particular case, rule edicts, are going to have a competitive advantage. Some learn quicker than others. But your point around have we communicated effectively enough to all stakeholders, I mean, you can never communicate enough. We certainly, spend a lot of time in the last 2 weeks briefing match officials, briefing clubs, and working with the media. But of course, could we have done more? Probably, for sure. Yeah.
There have been some coaches who have reacted badly to it, though, Andrew. A couple last night, obviously. Are you disappointed with their comments?
Yeah, I'm always disappointed, whenever we, have a situation where people are, critical of the game. But it's important to correct a few things on the record. I think, the commentary around it being dropped on clubs on short notice is just factually incorrect. So I want to clarify that point. And the second thing is, I mean, I understand. I love this game. And we're all passionate about this game. And, emotions run high after a game, particularly when you've lost. So I understand the heat of the battle and comments are made. But I do want to focus on the positive here. And that is, the leadership that was shown by Trent Robinson and Wayne Bennett in their comments. Trent said there were two harsh shots. They both resulted in sin bins. They should have been sin bins. But, in a typical game, you'd normally see five. And already we're seeing a reduction. Yes, I'm always disappointed when there's, comments made that perhaps aren't factually, correct. But everyone's entitled to their opinion as well.
How much of this is driven by mums and dads and getting them on side? And how much is driven by the threat of legal action, which, we've seen other sports face legal action around the world. How prevalent is that in your thinking?
There's a multitude of factors driving this. You can be administrators or you can be leaders. And you have to think about what's going to make... The world is changing. And you have to think about what's going to make the game relevant into the future. It's the primary consideration for this is the safety and well-being of the players in probably the fastest, toughest contact sport that there is anywhere on the planet. And we don't want to compromise on how tough and fast and entertaining the sport is, but we want to make sure that we are allowing our players to fulfill their playing career for as long as possible. And of course, we also need to stay connected with mums and dads who make decisions about where the kids will play. But Gordy made a good point this morning. They're different products and different experiences at the different age groups. But everybody, let's face it, everybody looks up to the heroes that play NRL. And we need to make sure that we have an entertainment product, but we also need to do the right thing in terms of what is appropriate. And we're drawing the line in the sand around protecting players on direct headshots. And I'll make no apologies for that.
We often see these things as a crackdown, then it drops off. Are you determined that this standard stays the standard, that you will not stop this until headshots are wiped out of the game?
Well, I don't think in the case the standards change. I think what happens over time is the learning curve kicks in and players and coaches adapt. And that's the reason why we don't see the shoulder charges. It's not because the crackdown stopped. It's because people know the consequences of doing that. And you can say the same for a number of challenges that we've had that we wanted to eliminate from the game. So this is not about a crackdown to make a point. This is about setting a new standard, which I think everyone then starts to adhere to. And if you don't, you lose your competitive advantage.
We have seen this in the past, though, Andrew, where there have been crackdowns announced. I support this. I think the game needs to go down. I think what we're seeing this weekend is the beginning of the adjustment period where clubs will actually say, OK, guys, we can't do this any longer and we need to start changing the way we approach the tackle, and we need to probably start changing our technique heading into a tackle just to ensure that they're a little bit lower down when contact is made. But we've seen in the past when the NRL has gone through crackdowns where they've reminded everybody, we're going to look at this. We saw one famously a couple of years back when Todd Bringenberg came out and begged everybody, don't blame the referees, blame me. But after about 4 weeks of it, and when everybody had got jack of it, he finally came out and told the referees to stop nitpicking, which was totally contrary to his earlier comments and totally undid the work that was just starting to see some progress and improvement. How can we be sure that you guys are going to see this through and that there will be long-term change?
Well said, Kenty, and I don't say that often to you, but well said. So let me tell you a funny story. This is a true story. We went to see the Gold Coast Titans early in the week, and we picked up a hire car at the airport. Peter and I were going off to see the club, and I was adjusting the rearview mirror, and it fell off. And you know what? That's a metaphor. We're not looking back. We're looking forwards. And I can tell you now that these edicts are here to stay. And we're doing it for the right reasons. We do not want to see direct harsh shots on players' heads. This is not a period, Paul, where we're going to wane and weave and change our minds and nitpick. We're asking everyone to get on board with this, to lower their sights, as you know, Marone said earlier, to adjust their technique if that's what's required, and the onus on the defending player to take responsibility with making sure that they come in at a level where they are not going to make direct contact with players' heads. I don't see that changing.
Talking about not looking back and looking forward, the 17th franchise, what percentage of that would you say now, if you're a betting man, that a team will be in Brisbane in a couple of years?
So there's some rules in rugby league. If you're an accredited official in rugby league, you can't bet on rugby league. And, I'm gonna plead the Fifth Amendment on that.
Well, just give me a percentage if I wanted to have.
I'm not allowed to give financial services advice either, Gordy, so I can't give you. No, I'm be honest, right? It's going to be fact based. Number one, number two, it's not going to be. There's no predetermined outcome here. It has to be financial. It needs to create value for everyone.
Yeah.
Right. And we're going to get some information from our broadcast partners. We're going to get some information from potential licensees, analyze it, and we're going to have to sell it. And only if it stacks up will it happen. I can't tell you, so what the percentage is. So it's 50-50 at best, and you have to decide.
Well, someone asking the fans downstairs, all those fans that walked in here, the 100,000 over the last 3 days, are people talking to those guys whether they would support a new franchise in Queensland?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been 2 years of work and research into, because the key thing here is to win new fans, is to win new sponsors, is to win, not to cannibalise or to trade in the existing fan base. So the research is about, well, where could we really acquire a whole new participation base and bring new fans and members into the game as opposed to cannibalising? So a lot of research. And a lot of and the onus on the licensees to show us what their plan is and what they're going to bring to the table.
Andrew, we've seen in recent weeks that some of the clubs have not trusted the NRL's, I would say, version of how this is going to unfold in respect to the report that's been prepared. Apparently, some report was prepared in 2019 that nobody has seen or cited. Can you firstly tell us what's happened to that report as far as the legitimacy of a 17th franchise goes?
Well, it's quite appropriate that I'm sitting next to Brent Reed, Paul, because I believe he has an access to that report. So
I haven't seen it, mate. Feel free to share it with me.
He certainly wrote about it like he'd seen it. Now, let me explain what's happened here. There was, as I said, we've been working on this for a number of years, and there was a board paper prepared in 2019 that went through a preliminary analysis of some of the stats we're referring to here. I mean, it's not a secret report, but all board papers are confidential and commercial in confidence. There's no real mystery around that. We had a great conversation with the Titans. I had a great conversation with all 16 club CEOs at a meeting we had on Friday. And we're pretty aligned on the data that we need and the facts that we need. And the report says, you know, we've got to make sure that we bring enough revenue into the game that is greater than the cost base. And we're all aligned on that.
I think it's nonsense. Not a lot of people agree with me. If you want to get a 17th team into the NRL, we're halfway through 2021 and you haven't announced who that team will be. How on earth are they going to be ready by 2023?
Well, we've done it before. The Titans had a similar 18-month runway. Look, the thing is, if you're ready, you're ready. And
but how could you be ready if you've got to go out and find corporate sponsors on a million different levels? People to find the sponsors, people to work in marketing, people to work in... I mean, this is a whole... I mean, you know more than me about this sort of thing, but it's only 18 months away and you still haven't announced who the team will be.
So we've set a timeline for the end of July, which is, you know, 2 months away. So we're going to have that 18-month window. It's not definitely going to happen, and part of what we have to test is seeing what can be done from a player... You know, you want a team and a club that's going to be successful on the field and off the field. So you have to have financial viability, but you also have to have competitiveness. We've got a great competition. You don't want to disturb that balance. So you're asking the right questions, and the answers will determine if it happens and when it happens. So it may be that this stacks up, but we're just not ready for 23. It may be that the potential licensees put forward a business case that shows they're ready to go now.
Andrew, the one problem, I'm going to make this very simple. The one problem that most clubs appear to have, from my understanding, is how do you introduce a 17th franchise which will immediately qualify that club for a $13 million annual grant, and yet you don't have another game to sell the broadcasters for more revenue or any of the sponsors or any of that for more revenue. So how can that in any way be financially viable?
Yeah, it's a good question. So a couple of things. If you have a 17-team competition, you don't have an extra game each week, but you have an extra 12 games. So you have an extra week, so it becomes 26 weeks, not 25. You get an extra 12 games in. So there's that, but more importantly, it's about where those games are, and it's about segmenting the market. And so what you have is broadcasters and sponsors being able to focus in on Queensland. Queensland's incredibly important for us. And having a potential fan base in this market means that you're able to sell more subscribers, you're able to bring in other commercial benefits for that entity. So there's a number of games perspective, but there's also where that market is and how you can, and our projections are that, you know, potentially over a five-year period, you could get 200,000 new avid fans into the game. And that's good for everyone in the ecosystem.
Okay, and the other thing people talk about is you're looking at, there's a big focus on fan base and where the next fan base is. But if the game has shown one thing, and if you look at it in a whole of game approach, the Roosters have got one of the smallest fan bases and junior bases in the NRL. And that's basically because when they first began in 1908, the Eastern Suburbs was a working class area where they had plenty of kids. But over time, that's changed. And we've seen in the past great junior leagues, for example, like Illawarra. Illawarra had a fantastic junior nursery to bring in all these players to the game, but that was never enough for them to win a premiership. The Roosters don't have juniors, but they've been winning premierships. The two most successful clubs, you could argue, of the NRL era are the Roosters and the Storm, neither of whom have got, would probably rank 15th and 16th, in all honesty, as far as junior nursery goes. So that doesn't show to me that just because you have a junior nursery, it guarantees success. And I wonder whether there's too much emphasis being put on the junior nursery as a key requirement for this new franchise, when the fact is, do we look at other markets, for example, Perth or a second New Zealand market, which would bring in other areas, other sponsors, and more a different TV market?
Yeah, Kent, you raise a really important question, and it's the analysis of participation and then how that translates into future fans is one thing, and then participation and pathway to develop talent that can make it all the way to the NRL, and that's another thing. And having the way we are, the 16 clubs, they all have slightly different models, right? So development clubs, you know, versus, well, development at different stages or ages. So, you know, the Penrith model, and you can clearly see the Penrith are, if you add up the number of caps, they're the least experienced team in the competition at the moment, but they've played together for a long period of time. That's a model. You mentioned the Storm and the Roosters. They are harvesting talent at a young age from other nurseries and bringing them into a system and then developing them in a much... you know, a smaller environment, but obviously in an intense environment. Now, there are different models. So when you analyze a franchise, you're analyzing participation base broadly, not necessarily just for that franchise. We want to make sure that we're bringing people into the game for two reasons: mums, dads, volunteers, and players, because they're the future fans. Doesn't matter if they play tackle, they could play tag, they could play touch, but that we're bringing them in as future fans, not just as a talent development pathway, number one. Number two, there are different ways to think about it, and we need to, you're raising such a good point, we need to think carefully about how we incentivize and reward clubs that develop players in different ways, and we need to have the right model for the right market, and of course we need to do more in the space, and we're thinking about it. It goes to salary cap, development fees, it goes to incentives for clubs on how they grow participation, but one thing we know, young people look up to the NRL stars, and that is our opportunity to connect with people.
You make a really good point, because, you know, Kenty just alluded to the Roosters and Melbourne Storm not having juniors. They go pick the eyes out of other teams. What if the Penriths and the Broncos and those big development clubs go, bugger this, I'm not going to do that anymore, I'm just going to go buy the talent instead of developing it? Is that a problem for the game?
Of course it is. So we need the coordinated approach, because what we need to do as a game is be very strategic about how we reward and incentivize and then allow market dynamics to do the rest. And I don't think the system is perfect.
I think they tried to bring that in a few years ago. They said that if you develop the players and they've stayed at your club for 7 years, you got a discount. Mm. and the clubs like the Roosters, but they all winch because they didn't want to do that because they don't want to go out there and develop players. They'd rather go buy them.
But they can't do it. They can't develop. Sorry to interrupt, but they can't develop on a like-for-like basis. So like if you say to the Roosters, you've got to become a development club, and they go up against the might of Penrith, they're never gonna be able to compete because they just don't have those juniors.
They could go and adopt the Central Coast. They could go and
adopt
the area.
They've done that. They're trying that, Gordon. But that's still not like-for-like.
But what you're gonna get? But you're never gonna have a one system for all because structurally we're not like that. We've got nine Sydney teams and we've got old traditional boundaries that are no longer relevant. You have to think broader than that. And the answer to that is we've finally got an independent commission, right, that can think strategically about what's best for the game. And you raise a good point. Hypothetically, if some of the clubs that are investing significantly in certain areas drop away from that, we would have a big problem. So we have to think holistically about it. But equally, someone else will step in. And we're lucky we have tens of thousands of volunteers that contribute to the development of players indirectly. We want to make sure we keep rewarding them.
We've got to let you go, mate. So good to have you here, and congratulations on the success that it has been.
Fantastic
Magic
weekend.
Round. Yeah, wonderful weekend, putting something like 20 mil into
the
Brisbane economy.
It's 30 weeks in a row, so I don't have to leave Queensland.
I think it's a great idea. Andrew, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's always great chatting to you guys, so I really appreciate it. And you guys do a great job for us in telling our stories, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot, and strong. Install a Ream.